This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The views and opinions of Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris should not be taken too seriously,
especially when they give advice.
Do not take Marshall's analogies literally,
especially when it comes to Russell Dorsey.
The sports thoughts of Rahimi and Harris may change at any time. Remember, it's just sports.
Okay, thanks, bye.
Bye. Rahimi and Harris, 10 to 2 on 670 The...
Today is technically the game day. They want a week.
Game week. Game week. Game week.
Pauly, you're downtown. What do you want to say to us? Pauly. Thanks for calling.
What do you hear? What do you say?
Hey, guys. Good show. I respect you both.
Uh-oh.
I was calling about why I believe Caleb Williams is going to be a short-lived quarterback in Chicago.
Folks, put your seatbelts on. This could be a bumpy ride.
Listen, I've hated the Bears for 45 years. This year, I like them because of Ben Johnson.
What? Wait a minute. You've hated the Bears for 4... Welcome,
yeah,
by the way.
They didn't try. I liked it when they won the Super Bowl.
Who are you crapping?
Ben Johnson, right? He's a mathematician like we just don't know, right? His brother is a genius.
Bears, yeah.
My boy's wicked smart.
Get the ball out of Williams' hands as fast as possible so he doesn't have to make decisions. Tyson Bagent is perfect for this.
There it is. Yes.
Okay, Pauly.
I think there's going to be another 45 years after you get a load of this.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Maybe everybody just needs to get it out of their system. I didn't mind that Paul was at least contributing. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. We broadcast live from the Score's Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi, and you. Our producers are Ray Diaz, Robbie Triano, and Brandon Fryer. You can also call us. You can text us 312-644-6767. And we are on Twitch. You can log on to Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. Our video team is Connor O'Donnell, Jacob Stutz, and Max Curtis. And naturally, the Bears game with the Dolphins ended in a tie yesterday at Soldier Field. So the people who went sat in the 95-degree weather, steamy, by the lakefront. Did you get what you wanted to see? You knew you were going to see Tyson Bagent. We found out for about how much. You knew you were going to see Case Keenum. But for me, it was also about figuring out what this offense was going to look like, even if the major players were not going to be a part of it.
Without the steam and the heat, you wouldn't have known it wasn't Father's Day because, you know, you get a tie, you get a tie, you get a tie. Everybody gets a tie. That's not exactly what we signed up for, but that is preseason football in the NFL circa 2025. I'll say this. You did see some skeleton clues about what maybe we could expect. But, Layla, let's be honest. I was just disappointed that the guys that I really want to see, I didn't get to see. And that's really how I was looking at this game. And I know that's a very almost negative way of looking, even if it's a pragmatic way of looking at preseason football. I was like, I want to see the guys. And so I was kind of angry that I was sitting there watching not the guys out there on the field, but there were guys out there who did make an impression upon me.
Well, you say it's football in 2025, Tua Tagovailoa started. You know, that you kind of knew what you were going to see out of the Dolphins based on the reports we got from joint practice, but then also having him on the field at least for some amount of time. You know, he went 5 for 6.
And then you also saw not the first team full defense get a goal line stand against Tua Tagovailoa and company. And it made me be like, okay, I see you, Dennis Allen. I see the potential of what your guys could do maybe against the first team offense. What if you had actually had your first teamers out there? Maybe they wouldn't even got to the goal line.
Well, I think the point that I know, if this is what I'm getting, then it's my job to figure out what I can learn about this team with what I'm seeing.
And that's fair.
And schematically, what I saw was we have an understanding of at least the order of operations of the Ben Johnson offense. We did see progress out of the offense as a whole. When I'm seeing multiple players that are open and the play is still executed, like it was, for example, after the 2-minute drill, even though it was on 4th and goal, I'm good with it. When I see other signs of progress, like your 37-year-old backup quarterback being comfortable in the pocket, when there is a defined understanding of how they were using Ozzie Trapillo and Braxton Jones, that is an important data point to me. Special teams, by the way, where they did retain the coach who was the assistant from last season, that is something that I feel like was a big part of the discussion, because Miami was able to rattle off big return yards at will. I know we want to hate on Matt Eberflus. I get it. But he's right when it comes to hidden yardage and a lot of that coming in your special teams game. And I'm pretty sure that's why your general manager drafted two punters. And I'm assuming that that means that those guys should also tackle. I bring this up because it's the standard. You know, it's just like what Ben Johnson had to say when he talked about how it doesn't count this game, but it does matter. When you're trying to evaluate, these are all major pieces of it. Now, shout out to Cairo Santos for hitting a 57-yarder. That hasn't happened before.
He salvaged special teams yesterday, because let me tell you something. Richard Hightower looking a lot like Richard Lowtower to me, because I was not impressed.
Also, why do I feel like Taj Washington was all world yesterday? His name got brought up so many times. And that's what happens in the preseason.
Names get brought up.
Is this the guy you're going to have to worry about? No. And in the same respect, did I love that we could say to ourselves, oh, the Bears had the ball with a minute 45. Let's go 2-minute drill here in the first half. Oh, here's another real 2-minute, so to speak, drill opportunity. And you did see a little bit of the structure. You did see that there wasn't as much pre-snap motion as maybe you thought there was going to be. You know, there were clues that we were given along the way where you're saying to yourself, I see this. And one of the biggest things for me, Marshall, was I felt like I was watching an offense in rhythm. And I can't remember the last time I saw a Bears offense in rhythm. I'm going to even say that in 2018, it was a little bit different because that wasn't Matt Nagy's play style.
I think the biggest takeaway for me, based on that offense that you're talking about, Layla, is it did, of course, remind you to the most recent comparison, which, of course, was the Bears in 2024. And it looked very different from an assortment of issues we saw throughout the season. And, of course, when you suffer a 10-game losing streak through the course of a season, you're going to focus on the most negative things you remember from that season. And as far as just a cleanliness, a crispness of operation, the bar was higher in this preseason game with whoever was out there, whether it was Tyson Bagent, Case Keenum. And it looked like what football is generally supposed to look like.
It also looked like you're not going to try to force stuff if it isn't working. And maybe that means that's why your starters weren't out there on the offensive and defensive side of the balls. I'm less concerned about the defense, especially after what we saw yesterday. When you measure that with what you heard from joint practices, I think there's a defined scheme there and there's a defined way they want to use their personnel. When it comes to what we saw out of the offense, I'm trying to figure out just what the shape of it is. How does this look? Where are your options? And yeah, I think there's a good point that was made by a texter here, which is a nice way to start football season. 847, Bajan missed Burden open in the end zone in the second quarter. I also think Kyle Monange on the actual touchdown play in that second quarter, at least on the fourth and goal, Monange was open in the middle of that offensive set. He was open at the front of the end zone, and then, you know, he's able to make the play to the back of the end zone. So I like that there were multiple people that you could see were open in these sets, because I didn't see a lot of dudes getting open last year. Even in these scenarios.
No, it seemed like, based upon a comparison to last year, to have two guys open on the same play.
At the goal line. On a passing play.
I was like, oh, this is very interesting and fascinating. And can I get more of this, but make it regular season?
That part. We're going to be saying that, though, for the next
2 weeks.
Month, really, when you consider that we aren't going to see a regular season game until September 8th. So when I consider that piece of it, this is what we're working with. So how are we going to learn about what we've seen so far?
What I've learned from yesterday, especially on the offensive side, Layla, my biggest takeaway was the Bears are good at backup quarterback. I feel very confident, more confident than I have maybe ever, in what I've seen in their backup quarterback room with just Tyson Bagent and Case Keenum's ability to run an offense and look proficient. Even if, let's say, Case Keenum obviously has been playing a long, long time and has started a lot more games than Tyson Bagent. Just their, you know, standard operating procedure looked good. I think that was one of my bigger takeaways. And also, you know, you look at guys like Kyle Manungai. I don't know what this guy is. And now I'm seeing what he is. And I was like, you know what? Six carries, 30 yards, and looking tough and doing it, I'm good with that.
I am too, but at the same time, when I was watching him on the field, you're also just seeing how that guy in your uniform with the pads and the helmet on relates to his opponents. And yes, I said this in our pre-show meeting. You could tell he just looks smaller. And, you know, unfortunately, that's part of the reason guys like this drop. And you're not necessarily thinking about it when it comes to running the ball. We've seen guys listed at 5'8 run the ball and do it well. That's not the point. But when you know that Ben Johnson talks about how important pass blocking is, and you see him get beat a couple times in the pass blocking game, how can you depend on him in those roles? And that's not to say that you need to. That's to say, does this play work with this guy doing this? And perhaps that answer is no. And then you evaluate and go from there. How many times do you need to run that play? You know, how much do you need your running back to do X, Y, and Z? Was it a one-time situation because he's learning and he's a rookie? That's when you take all these things into account for me.
This is the beauty of the fact that this is preseason game one of the Ben Johnson era. As we talk about it here on Raheemy and Harris, and understand that there is room for improvement. There was always going to be room for improvement. And you actually have some time to make improvements that need to be made, whether that's the plays you're selecting, the personnel you have out there, and then also just finding out who's going to be where on your depth chart when the regular season starts. It's all not just based on training camp, but what you see when the live bullets start flying, as they did both in the joint practice on Friday and then furthermore in this Sunday scrimmage of a game.
What stood out to you?
The biggest thing,
play-wise, like, were there certain plays that stood out to you? What was your impression of the offense
with Manungai? The one play where it looked like he was gonna not go anywhere, and he just kind of dragged some guys with him and snuck out and got a double-digit run. That stood out to me because that showed like the toughness that you need to have if you're going to be a seventh round pick and find a way onto an NFL roster and actually be making things happen. The other things that stood out, you mentioned goal line and what they were able to do in the red zone, both on defense and offense. Because if you got your twos out there stopping ones from another team, that's impressive to me. You know, I like Dennis Allen, first of all, saying, okay, it's fourth down. We're sending everyone. Watch this.
Full house blitz.
Full house. And so what I loved about that is like saying, hey, it's not the standard, let's see how long our guys can cover you and if our front four can get to you. And no more of that. If I have you in a situation where we think we have an advantage, we're going to push the button. The big red button, the one that says do not hit. They hit the button, went out, and made something happen. That's what you have to do in real football games. We see it all the way from the Super Bowl back to week one. Teams that win take chances, smart chances, mind you, and find ways to get things done. Dennis Allen dialed it up and got things done.
This segment with Raheemy and Harris talking about the Bears game yesterday is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. I think an important part of what you're saying, though, with running a full house blitz to end the game is, when the hell else are you going to run it? Like, you have this gift of an opportunity. There's not postseason overtime, and I am perhaps the oddball that thinks there should be based on the fact that when you have teams like the 49ers lose the Super Bowl because they aren't running their postseason, I think, overtime procedure, then you could argue that that's something you would like to practice, you would like to game for.
It would help if you know the procedure.
So that's that for me is big. Is there a way to rehearse that? And I'm not saying the Bears are making it to the Super Bowl. They might not make it to the postseason, but the point is, this is all a practice of procedure. And you want to be tight in those procedures. And so I think about that stuff. But when wouldn't you do it then? Yeah, like, you have these opportunities. You don't get to use them very often. So why wouldn't you just run the house at people knowing that the game doesn't count? You're still trying to figure stuff out. I get weird in cases like this. I want to run some of that stuff. I think trick plays is a little different because
you want to save them.
I was going to say, you not only do you want to save them, you have to establish certain formations really well first to make that team think that you are running one play and you're not. Yeah, that is a Ben Johnson offensive, I think, not just statement, but that's a tenet, a mission statement of his. So knowing that, why wouldn't you just do something fun like that where you send everybody and see who's first?
I love it. I just thought that was a declaration of what we're willing to do to make something happen. And I don't know that I always saw that. And I've always said, I thought Matt Eberflus was a good defensive coordinator, but a bad head coach. And sometimes I thought the bad head coaching bled into his defensive coordinating. And that's why you got some of the results that you got.
I love that Studs is joining us on Twitch, and he says it well. Dennis Allen is a crazy person. Love it. That's the idea, though. When you have these opportunities, why not do it? Did it concern you that the Bears went 3-and-out on their first drive?
Yes.
It did? Because I'm going to say that I was like, wait a second.
You know what it was?
3-and-out on the first drive, and then I had a twinge of flashbacks.
Exactly. It was a little too familiar, a little too on the nose, right?
But then I think it's, they went again, and then they went 3-and-out again. But I do want to say this. Part of what you want to see in the preseason is when you give players who are young or new players to your team significant game opportunities, how are they redeeming themselves? And I think we saw a lot of that, too. Like, there were a couple of plays where Josh Blackwell missed a dude, and then he came back and was able to redeem himself during the game. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah, I think we've got to get to, and we will in our next segment, a little bit of who our guys were, not just Kyle Monongai, who, unfortunately, that first series was also he's a rookie. He's a seventh-round pick. You have to always balance it. But also the guys who we want to see, like the conversation with Braxton Jones right now and Ozzie Trapillo and how that's being evaluated. You know, we want to see the growth out of Austin Booker. And I thought there was a lot of really good discussion. I had a lot of observations about that. That's going to come up in our next segment. Our training camp coverage here on 670 The Score, by the way, with Raheemi and Harris, is presented by Chevy Drive Chicago and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. But I think when it comes to what I'm writing down, what stands out to you, when I'm taking notes and it takes me 4.5 hours to watch the game because I pause and then I rewind and I'm like, oh, why did this play work? Why didn't it? And I'm seeing who's blocking who and what's going on at the line of scrimmage. You like when you're able to say, I see progress here. I see what they were trying to do here. I see why this is important to get a look at right now.
The biggest thing for me is taking that and trying to process it and project with it, right? And understand, okay, what's next? Because it is preseason. And I'm not saying preseason doesn't matter, but I know what matters most is probably the fact that the fans weren't in the stands when Caleb Williams and assorted starters on the offense went out there and ran, according to Brad Biggs, 87 plays with no defense out there.
And by the way, even that number is higher than I thought it was going to be, because Stacey Dales mentioned it on the broadcast. She said they were going to do another 25, and that was in addition. So I think that was, I believe she said that was today. I heard 70 to begin with. 87, that's more than you're running in a game.
More than a game, more than a practice. And Ben Johnson even said afterwards, you know, he was like, I'd like to do more of that. You know, they basically just don't have time. But he liked the procedure where he would get up and either get the play in, and Ben Johnson oversaw it himself personally, get the play in, and then they, you know, do the simulated huddle, go to the line, and do something.
I also want to point this out. Not just the fact that we need to know what the guys who weren't playing, who were the starters, were doing before the game, but what they were working on too. Cadence was brought up yet again, which is why I think as long as they're bringing it up, you know that that must be an issue, because why would you tell an opposing NFL team whose whole job is to make you look bad that you're working on it if that's not the case? But also, just the way the plays were being called, especially that two-minute drill. You know, I'm sitting here looking at my notes, and when it says two-minute drill time, exclamation point, and I'm excited about it, that's a change. And then I'm like, oh, hey, look, a downfield blocking concept screen pass that works. It was so nice to see. Travis Homer had two players blocking ahead of him, two offensive linemen who are ahead. That there's checkdowns that are being executed as well by Tyson Bagent. Am I a little concerned about how many times the ball was deflected in the game? Yes. But do I see more of a process happening? Is it married? And can you see what they're talking about, the coaches, when they have all these glowing compliments of these players, can you see it in the game? And I think closer for me, the answer is yes.
Not only the answer yes to that question, but the more important question. Does it make sense? And guess what? I watched it and it made sense. That's not something I could say last year a lot of times, the majority of the time on offense.
I did have to check myself, though, because I remember in the preseason last year, in the Shane Waldron era, that there were times where the Bears had really confident downfield running schemes, and then they entirely got away from them. They executed them well, and then it was like the second the Bengals took it away on like two plays, you never saw it again. And I'm talking about in the preseason. Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping won't happen. Do I think it's going to happen? No. But do I have to check myself when it comes to being excited about what I'm seeing in that way? Maybe.
We'll see how it plays out, but I mean, one guy is Ben Johnson, the other guy is Shane Waldron. That's enough said, literally, based on track record. Enough said.
Coming up next here on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score, we're going to drill down, as you people with real jobs like to say. Let's talk about the personnel that stood out to us and why. I think that's a really important aspect of this. We're talking Bears all hour. We are going to talk Cubs, by the way. That's coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Hang with us, but we get to talk about a Bears game, and we're going to do it on The Score.
You're listening to Raheem and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Downfield shot for Duvernay, and he's got it. Devin Duvernay, the new addition. A nice strike from Tyson Bagent for the burst. Big pass play of the day at 18 yards. Play clock winding down. It's Keenum. 13-year NFL veteran is going to sling it for the touchdown. Fade route. Walker. It is touchdown for Chicago. And the Bears have the lead again.
It was awesome to hear Adam Amin on the call. Jim Miller was there as well. Jim Miller with a bit of the glow up, man. Longer hair, shaved his facial hair.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
He ain't getting older. He getting more distinguished.
Change it up. Jim Miller was on the call as well. Also Stacey Dales. And it was great to hear Stacey on the call. I really enjoyed listening to her analysis. I thought one of the best things that actually she talked about, Marshall, and this is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score, talking Bears, and yesterday's game, was her discussion of how you have to evaluate Ozzie Trapillo at left tackle versus what you're seeing out of Braxton Jones. Now, you guys know I have been hard on Braxton Jones, but the reason it takes me 4.5 hours to watch the game like it did yesterday is because I give my DVR a workout. I will pause the tape. I will rewind. I will look at a play 3 times, 4 times during the game sometimes to see what went wrong, what went right, and how. And when I'm seeing 70 get pushed into the quarterback multiple times or get beat on a play, first thing I'm asking right now is, was he really healthy? And then the second thing is he a better left tackle right now than what we're seeing out of the rookie Trapillo? And Stacey said during the game, and I thought it was a very good way of putting it, that you're really evaluating Trapillo on two people, 2024 Braxton Jones and 2025 post-injury Braxton Jones. What I feel like I saw yesterday was a different Braxton Jones than what even we saw last season. You give him some time because he's a veteran and he's earned it, but we all know what's happening there, and that is truly a position battle.
Well, we know it's a month, right? And it's interesting because when you hear the Bears talk about the left tackle position, the fact that it was going to be a three-way battle, now Kieran Amagaji is dealing with an injury now. That's taking him out of the mix, and now it's a two-person battle. And you know they want to coalesce as soon as possible, that starting five, because there's so many different people involved. If Braxton Jones is not involved, that would be 4 new starting linemen to go alongside Darnell Wright at the right tackle position. And I'm sitting here watching the left tackle position specifically yesterday, wondering a couple of things. Much like you, I saw Braxton Jones. I was like, is he fully healthy?
He already plays so upright anyway that it's hard to tell and marry what the ankles were doing with what the arms and the body are doing there. You know, and he's tall. He's 6'5".
He ain't as tall as Ozzie Trapillo, though, who's 6'8", but who's also healthy, but who's also a rookie and has never done this before, who also played right tackle last year. You can start listing all the things. And so when you talk about that comparison, 2024 Braxton Jones, who also wasn't healthy the entire season. Mm-hmm. And then post-injury Braxton Jones, who we don't know what percentage he's actually at, because it can't be 100 based on what I saw yesterday, or else the Bears are in trouble.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it, is you're having to figure out, is this person's 75% as good as another person's 100? And that's part of it, too. Hey, speaking of offensive line combinations,
yes,
Ray, Robbie, Marshall, you guys see Jermaine Ifedi and Larry Borum out there?
Oh, boy, those names. Names of the past.
I saw Ifedi, the traffic cone. I saw him.
I saw the ISO on Larry Borum. And then I was like, Jermaine Ifedi. And then I start thinking, I'm like, false start. Jermaine Ifedi. Ah,
bringing back those memories.
Those were the days.
Bad game memories.
When I was like, Borum.
You know what that was an exercise in, though, Layla, being honest, is... offensive linemen are hard to find.
That
you can have a bad, you know, career going with one team, but another team will take a flyer on you because they need to know maybe you were just in a bad situation and keep it moving. It goes back to, remember when Tevin, over the offseason, you saw how high up he was on the list of available offensive linemen, and you're like, oh, like he's going to make somebody happy when they sign him.
Man,
Tevin Jenkins.
Also, I felt like Larry Borum was a very capable backup. So I'm not surprised that he got a job either. I think as we evaluate the personnel, we have to talk about what we saw more out of Tyson Bagent and Case Keenum, who I both think brought a lot to the game yesterday. And again, when I hear them talk, and I hear them talk about what they've seen so far in camp, how is it going to look on the field? And I feel like, once again, there were consistencies there. So let's listen to what Ben Johnson had to say about his backup QBs.
Yeah, no, I thought both of those guys operated at a high level. We've been having, you know, some ups and downs over the course of camp, just operation, pre-snap penalties and all that. And I felt like we weren't 100%, but we were pretty smooth. I mean, there were some things that got thrown at us over the course of the game, whether, you know, cover zero or, you know, they're playing base to 11, you know, and so – things are changing pretty quickly there, and yet they were able to stay calm and composed and make sure we were organized and gave us a chance to have a good play. So I know it wasn't all fun and games out there in terms of getting yards and all that, but I thought they did a great job keeping the unit going.
So listening to that, it sounds like he's pleased, but you can tell there's room for improvement along the way, which – preseason game number one, that's kind of what I expect to hear.
The first two drives, can't be doing that in the big schedule. Be doing that on Monday Night Football.
It's not optimal, but depending on the flow of the game, you know, you can not do stuff. You can go 3-and-out in your first two drives in a game and win the game. But you want to look as crisp as possible with your first 15 plays that are pre-scripted and this is what our plan is. And if you can't do anything, it is, hey, how good is your play caller at making adjustments? Because clearly what he came out the shoot with was not working. Either that or the execution.
As far as a position battle is concerned, I still think Bagent has the edge over Case Keenum.
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind. Bagent is the backup quarterback. Keenum is the third quarterback. I think they will keep three quarterbacks. But let me tell you something. Watching Case Keenum in that game against the Dolphins, backups, smooth.
Yeah, he's a veteran presence. You know what else I saw that we didn't see in the past, I don't know, several years?
What's that?
Just how comfortable he was in the pocket. You saw a confident quarterback actually step up into the pocket.
And that's with pressure coming or not, right?
I want to also make the point that this is a guy who, as you know, I respect tremendously because he is the NCAA passing yard record holder, touchdowns too. The guy knows how to throw a football. But when you can see that the Bears are making a starting quarterback that comfortable where he can do that, he has that movement at the line of scrimmage, that's an incredibly good sign. I also want to point out, I know we've talked about Kyle Manungai and what we want to see out of him. Kyle Manungai, respectively, from the pure role of running, I think did his job. It's the pass blocking where I need to see more, and that, how are you using your size? How are the Bears using you in those ways that we need you to? Because I do think about David Montgomery and how good he was at pass blocking, not just with Detroit now, but when he was with the Bears here. Moving to the defensive side of the ball, I don't know how we all don't come away from this saying Austin Booker has shown tremendous growth. He was the game force when it came to who stood out for the Bears on Sunday.
If you can have an MVP in a game in which you did not win, Austin Booker would have been the MVP in this game. Three sacks, forced fumble. That man was he was not only Tasmanian devil-like in his energy, but really in his consistency throughout the game. Even if he wasn't making the play, he was right there.
It wasn't just that. And people can say, oh, it's the talent he was facing, X, Y, and Z. No, it was how he was moving at the line of scrimmage. The moves he used to beat his opponent. You saw a spin move. You saw a strong arm. There are clear tactics there. There were times where I expected him to get from what was the left side, if you're looking at the offense, if you're the quarterback, the left side of the play all the way over to the right, like closing out like an NBA defensive player because he was that fast and he was athletically overmatching everyone. I think you're seeing a marriage there of his skill set to go along with his traits.
He's a year older. He was young when he came out. And now what we knew was going to be a quote-unquote developmental player looks like he's been doing some developing. So the question becomes now, okay, where is he going to end up by the end of the preseason on the depth chart for Dennis Allen, and how will he be utilized?
I really liked what Anthony Heron had to say on the Fox 32 postgame show with Lou Kanellis. Ant went so far as to mock it up for the viewers. He used Lou as a prop in his example or a tackling dummy of how he's supposed to relate, like how Austin Booker was standing in the angles he was using. So picture Anthony Heron right now standing behind Lou Kanellis, facing you watching the show, and here's what Ann Heron had to say about Austin Booker.
Last season was supposed to be sort of a redshirt developmental year for Austin Booker. He actually got a lot more playing time during the season than we anticipated last year. And we've seen other pass rushers come through this town in recent seasons where we haven't necessarily seen that development. Now, in this first preseason game today, there are some signs of that development. Do me a favor, partner. Just take like one step forward. I want to just quickly display for folks where, you can face the camera. You can even look at us in the monitor. Okay. Where Austin Booker has grown a lot of times as a long pass rusher, like if he were rushing on most offensive linemen, you might see Austin Booker's head over them, but the issue is he would always rush down the middle. Now you saw today examples of him attacking the outside half, outside third of blockers with more pad level. So when you get a flat back, you can really enhance your ability to use leverage into a blocker, and he got rid of. He was talking about the long arm he used where the offensive tackle fell down on the ground. So he gets into the guy with leverage into his sternum and then quickly falls off into that gap. That's where he's getting rid of those blockers. He's able to now elude blockers in a way that's a lot more deceptive, a lot more elusive, and it takes advantage of his actual frame because he's not a hulking pass rusher. He's not going to overpower everyone he rushes against, but because he's got long arms and he can rush with leverage, that's where you can utilize your levers and your limbs to take advantage of the movement skills that he possesses. But some guys develop that as pass rushers. Some guys really never get to that stage where they do it consistently. It's only a preseason game. It's the first one. But we saw a lot of positive signs of the development that seems to be happening with Booker.
My favorite part was, did you guys watch it? Like, did you see where Lou's just standing there looking at the camera the whole time while Ant's moving behind him?
Lou, very undersized, is that mannequin, if you will.
Ant was you could see most of Ant's face when he was standing behind. But that's the point when it comes to the advancements that Austin Booker has made. It's not just, oh, he looks better. It's here's why he looks better. And when you saw how he was dominating his opponents at the line, that's what made everything work.
I want to see if that continues. And I'm not skeptical. I'm just hesitant to anoint because he did pop last year in the preseason. And I want to make sure that this is not, fool's gold is the wrong term. I want to make sure that this is something that is sustainable.
I don't know how you bet on it because there's really no way to bet on it. Like, I'm not putting a number on anything.
Right.
But I think I'm going to see the guy I'm going to see this season.
Oh, you think that kind of performance can hold up and you can at some point in the regular season see a guy who's out here making sacks?
Is he going to be running past everybody that way when you're facing the ones? No, I don't believe so because the speed will catch up. You know, the difference is not going to be as vast. But when I see somebody who is a disruptive presence and somebody who you can use in those ways, based on what you saw, you have to start somewhere with the growth and the skill set. And like I said, those moves to beat your opponent. And I feel like we're seeing that.
If you're right, what I do want to see is the idea of a Montez Sweat opposite Austin Booker with a chess piece like Dio Dobingo, Obingo moving around and finding space to make plays happen.
Yeah, on pass, a rover.
On obvious passing downs.
Well, and again, just lean into what these guys do well. If you know somebody has this skill set and he's good at this thing, then go ahead and do it. Also, shout out to Jahdae Walker, by the way, who had a hell of a catch in the back of the end zone. And Luther Burden, who really did, I think, had some really solid body awareness and was able to know where down markers were and where he needed to be. As a receiver, as a rookie, when you've missed that much OTA time, to be able to do so, I think that says a lot about the skill set that he's working with as well.
I don't want to get over, I don't want to say too much because not enough has happened yet as far as preseason game number one. But there were positive signs for a lot of these guys that you're just hoping, hey, can I see it again next week against the Bills?
Yeah, I mean, I don't need a rookie catching a ball out of bounds. You know, for example, did we see that yesterday? No. Did we even see a lot of penalties relative to what you see in a first preseason game?
No, it was cleaner. It was clean. Look, it was clean.
Did you see what the offense was trying to do?
Absolutely.
There it is. Like, in the NFL, you can hide information all you want. How are you executing it? And good play calling makes you look at good execution.
Certainly improves your chances.
We have more here to come on Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score as we analyze the first Bears preseason game. George McCaskey was on the Fox 32 broadcast. Not only did he have a lot to say about the stadium, who he thinks should be in the Hall of Fame next, but he also did something that I can confidently say has never happened before. We examine the tape next on Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score.
Layla Raheemy, Marshall Harris, Raheemy and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Come on. Everyone's very hopeful. Everyone's very excited. Talking to the fans, coming into practices. You know, we're in the honeymoon period. We're undefeated. So I think people are very excited that we got the guy that they wanted us to get. But now we need to take care of business.
That was George McCaskey talking about Ben Johnson. This is Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score. And George McCaskey joined the Fox 32 broadcast yesterday with Adam Amin, Stacey King. Adam and Stacey is a new one, huh? We got a new Adam and Stacey in the house. Adam and Stacey Dales and Jim Miller. And the first thing that I noticed is things are going to be different at Halas Hall. Listen to the word George McCaskey used when he was talking about the upcoming season and Ben Johnson.
Well, we got the coach that everybody wanted us to get, and that's not always the best choice. But we think here we've married the best choice with the popular choice. So we're very excited. He's demanding. He's intense. He's focused. He's innovative. He's smart. And the players respect the hell out of him.
Yep.
Whoa! George is cussing now? George is cussing on TV?
And the players respect the hell out of him.
Let's go!
So two things on this. One, I think he never would have said that if Virginia McCaskey was still alive.
That's the point!
Number two, I'm not giving that man credit for saying the word hell.
I don't even think hell was on Hard Knocks last year.
No, it wasn't. But again, I think we know the
reason why. Hard Knocks!
I understand. It's hard for me to get too fired up over that. I will say this. Maybe now, the next time they're on Hard Knocks, there will be cursing. That's when I'll get excited. Because it'll be raw.
The next time the Bears are on Hard Knocks?
Yeah.
I think the entire National Football League, along with HBO, probably doesn't want to see that happen.
But he's just shown you it's a new time, a new era, a new day. You can use bad language now at Soldier Field, at Halas Hall.
He said hell. It's not like he dropped a really bad cuss word that would have them to cause to like dump the broadcast.
But that's what my point is. Like, he's slowly going in that direction. I think this is definitely The gate is open now.
Are you sure you don't want Hard Knocks for this moment again?
There's a bond growing between Eberflus and Williams.
I knew exactly what clip he was going to play, too.
That bond was severed and set on fire. Hey, it exploded several times during the season.
It's now floating down a barge, still on fire.
And the barge is carrying dumpsters, which are also on fire.
I'm here for George letting it loose a little bit, man. I'm here for it. Even if it's like Ned Flanders plus.
I loved it. No,
that's what it is.
He knew exactly what he was doing. And I am glad he did it.
Do you think
he
and
the players respect the hell out of him?
I stopped everything. Do you want to know how many times I rewound that part of it? I was like, what? He did what?
I have a question.
No, no. No, he didn't.
Layla, do you think he went over that script with Ted Cruz?
I hope not. I don't think he had to. I do want to get into some of the other stuff that was asked of him on the broadcast, though, because number one, Jim Miller asked him about the status of the stadium and what's next.
Yeah, but we've got to convince them that this is going to be great for the state, and that's on us. We need to do more work in that area. We need to do more convincing. Kevin Warren is leading that effort. He's doing a great job. He did it in Minneapolis, and we're confident that he can do it here in Chicagoland.
Now, forgive my ignorance. I'm not sure why suddenly the Bears being in Illinois would be bad for Illinois, unless that was a telegraphed way of saying you're trying to ask the state for more money that they don't have.
They're definitely asking the state for more money. The state doesn't have the money to allocate in theory, but could come up with the money if they wanted to. We all know what the end game is here. We all know what the end result is going to be. The matter, though, Layla, is how long is this going to take before we actually get the shovels in the ground and get a plan going? I mean, they had what, the emergency? Was that an emergency press conference Friday? How would you describe that? Kevin Warren, along with George McCaskey, saying, we're going to have a press conference, by the way.
I would say unexpected, not emergency. Okay. I don't think anybody saw it coming.
I don't think it was like an emergency podcast where like something has happened.
It was
that 2
p.m. on a
about.
Friday. It was exactly what it is, a news dump.
Does that fall under news dump, though? Because you had everybody up there because of the joint practice.
Are you kidding? We've got a piece of news that we're holding on to until 5 on it that I don't think anybody knows, because it might have also been somewhat of a well-timed nugget of information, if you get my drift.
And weekend I'm information the most.
I think there's weekend information, and there's that clear Friday. The Friday, like after 3 p.m., that's news dump territory.
I love all the texts we're getting, by the way. 630, why did you do this? I actually rewatched episode 1 of Hard Knocks last night. God, that was embarrassing. 765. George is a peacock. You got to let him fly. Fly, George! Say damn next time. It's fun.
765.
He's pissed off.
He did say that, but that's not a cuss word.
Is it not?
No.
Well, I think it falls in the same category as hell.
George
Carlin. Hell is just a place to me.
Hell, damn, and crap. You can say those on the air.
Yeah, it's not one of the seven words.
Yeah, George Carlin's still the dude.
765. Marshall needs George to stop dropping F-bombs and throwing up with the finger to the Packers, and I'm all for it.
I want to hold on to something else. I mentioned it earlier. George also talked to the broadcast crew about the Hall of Fame and what's next. Well, luckily for us, our next guest was part of that discussion. We're going to talk to Jim Miller, who was in the booth. You know him well, the former Chicago Bear. He was part of the broadcast team yesterday. So we will discuss that with him and a whole lot more of what he saw, because he knows a thing or two about this Ben Johnson offense in a way that we do not. So that's coming up next here on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score.